Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus, the next generation of advanced trading from Fidelity. Customize your tools and charts and access them seamlessly across desktop, web, and mobile. For faster trades anywhere you go, try the all-new Fidelity Trader Plus. Learn more about our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/traderplus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Thanks for listening on this Saturday morning. Staying with us the first hour. We've got a lot more ahead. Until 11 o'clock, I'm David Haw with Bruce Levine right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This is Inside the Clubhouse, broadcasting live from our Hyundai Score studios. And it's time now to go out to our guest hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find the Cubs president of business operations, Crane Kenny. Good morning, Crane. How are you?
Hey, good morning, David.
Good to have you. Thanks for joining us. Look, yesterday, you were part of a ceremony outside Wrigley Field where the new DraftKings facility is going up, 22,000 square feet. There was a beam signing ceremony. There was a lot of pomp and circumstance, Crane. Let's start there. So did you have any misgivings about having that on a day where, let's face it, when you go to Wrigley Field at Clark and Addison, there's so many obvious signs of progress, whether it's Hotel Zachary, Gallagher Way, or this new facility going up. You step inside the ballpark, and you don't see as many obvious signs of progress. How do you reconcile the two?
So I think this topic came up as well when the National Park Service dedicated Wrigley as a national monument last year. You know, you set these things up months in advance, and the business has to keep moving forward. And I know Jed and the team are working hard on the baseball side. On our side, you know, it's a project like any other that's got timelines and milestones, and the milestone that was scheduled for yesterday was celebrate with our partner DraftKings and the city who've been helpful to us, as well as our partners at Levy and our architects and others, and bring them to the site and kick off what will be the finishing touches for our sports book. So we care as much as anyone about what's happening on the field. It's a difficult year. Great to see Kyle throw so well last night, but we understand the heartache that everyone's going through seeing our team on the field some days, but the business has to keep moving. And, you know, yesterday was the date we had scheduled for the dedication of the beam signing.
Crane, I'll stay in the subject. The Chicago Cubs haven't had an All-Star game for 33 years. The only team that was longer, I believe, is the Dodgers, and they're having one this year. Can you tell me a little bit about the dynamic of that, and also with the additions of things like DraftKings and the hotel, as David pointed out, and improvements in the area? Why wouldn't Chicago be the destination after you guys invested $1 billion into Wrigley Field over the last 7 years?
Very good question, right? It seems like it's our turn. Last had it in 1990. There's only 30 teams in baseball. I think during the reconstruction of Wrigley, it was obvious why we weren't going to host the game until the ballpark was done. With the sportsbooks, our last major project on the schedule. So by the second quarter of next year, that will be finished. And it will put us in a good place with the league to get the game. The awarding of the All-Star game is really a three-party dance, though. It's us, it's the league, and the city. What you're seeing in most cases is that cities are rewarded for significant investments in the facilities by bringing the All-Star game. An All-Star game in a city like Chicago would probably generate between $75 and $100 million of economic activity for the city. So it's a real nice boom for the city when, you know, typically during the All-Star game, all the ballparks except for the host city are empty. So it's up to us, the city and the league, to come together. The building will be done, as I just mentioned, by the second quarter of next year. There's some infrastructure and mostly security related issues around Wrigley the city needs to complete. We're working with them to get those done. And once we get those done to the league satisfaction, I think we'll be one of those most deserving to get it.
joined by Cubs President of Business Operations, Crane Kenny, here on Inside the Clubhouse. Crane, so that's when it will be done. What will it be? Because reading about it, hearing about it, goodness sakes, 22,000 square feet, 800 people, it seems like it will be the capacity. And this has to be a typo, right? A 2,000 square foot television?
Yeah, the new thing in these sports books, and like everything, whether it was the hotel or parts of the ballpark or our new clubs, you know, we toured all of the existing sports books in Atlantic City and Las Vegas. There's one in the Meadowlands. So we went and saw what best in class looked like and then tried to take it up a notch. You know, the it's not one single television. It's kind of a gigantic ribbon board that kind of goes from sort of right field through center field to left field inside the building. And it'll allow us to have four or five different games on at one time, you know, so particularly around March Madness time when, you know, you've got three or four regionals playing at the same time. You can have all the games on. If it were something like the Super Bowl, you'd dedicate all the screens to just the one game or the Kentucky Derby or something like that. So, it can be up to a 2,000-square-foot screen for just one game, but typically it'll be broken up into multiple games. And, you know, we think it's just another great amenity on campus. So the hotel was a nice lift for the campus, as was Gallagher Way and the office building. And now we'll add a sports book for those who choose to partake.
Crane, in the offseason, we were hearing that the Cubs had money to go out and get other players. They did go out, and certainly they got themselves, you know, a starting pitcher. And you guys signed Suzuki, but it seems there was money left on the table. When you looked at, you know, the rumors about Eric Hosmer being more than a rumor, but reality and a lot of money coming back there. Also, the rumors that were not necessarily rumors about Correa and money being there. For that money that we heard about, will that be spent in the future? Is there a bigger payroll that will be looked at in 2023? I know that Jed has an awful lot to say about that, but certainly you and Tom are involved in that. Where did that money go this year, and where will it go in the future?
That's a good question. So, I hate to keep giving the same answer year after year, but it is the same answer year after year, which is, you know, yesterday we had our first concert of the summer, Grateful Dead, and have another one tonight. All of these activities, all of them generate revenue that go back into the baseball budget. So the sports book will do the same thing. And, you know, this goes back to my time with Jim Hendry. It's sort of always been the same program, which is you generate as much revenue as you can. You obviously take care of your fixed expenses, so the labor and other expenses that, you know, go into running our operation. And we've been really fortunate. The Ricketts family, they're not a public company. They don't have to satisfy shareholders. They let us put every dollar that's not used in running the business back into the payroll. So, as you point out, we had a lot of money left at the end of this year we didn't spend. All of that will roll over for next year. And again, we trust our baseball operations guys to make good decisions with those proceeds. And, you know, they'll either use them next year or down the line. But, again, they stay inside the system. And I get it's boring. I keep saying this every year. But it's a closed loop, and you know, when the time is right, we'll spend those resources to build a great team.
Well, you keep answering it, Crane, because I think we keep asking it, and we keep asking it because I think people keep pointing it out that, you know, they want the Cubs to spend like a big market team. That's the easiest way to address it. And you look at the payroll rankings, and you know the Cubs are 14th, and you just explain why that may be the case. But when you look at it, and you know, it's pointed out to us all the time, every morning, every day here on The Score and elsewhere. You know, the Cubs, it's the most expensive fan experience in baseball, and they have the 14th ranked payroll. And you'd like to see a little bit more or less room between the two when it comes to payroll, when it comes to MLB rankings. Do you have a realistic, I don't want to say goal, but is there a spot where you feel comfortable being? And would you agree that it does stand out when the Cubs in Chicago are 14th?
Yeah, you know, it's a talking point. I get it. I mean, I think we got to have a little bit of historical perspective. So if you look at between 2016 and 2021, we rank fourth in all of baseball, only behind the Yankees, Dodgers, and just a smidge behind the Red Sox. So over our last championship window, when we were in that championship window, we were one of the top spenders in baseball. And during those 6 years, we tripped the CBT penalty three times. So including as late as in 2020. So like just 2 years ago, we were over the limit. Now it was a shortened season, obviously, but we were over the limit in 19 as well. So I think what we're, you know, and I go back now through Sam Zell and all the way back through Tribune, like we're so lucky that we have an owner that lets us spend when the time is right. And again, over the last 6 years, we've been top four in baseball. Clearly this year we've taken a step back, and as I said, all the resources that weren't used that would have pushed us up the ladder on the payroll chart this year will go into next year's budget. So I feel really lucky that Tom has never said, like, no, I don't want to spend. It's whatever's in the system goes into our baseball operations department to try and win, and that includes paying the CBT tax when we go over it, like we did in 16 and 19 and 20. And I feel like that it's a little bit of a false narrative because, yes, in this one single year, we're back into the middle of the table. But if you look at any sort of reasonable length of time, we're always in the top four or five.
Crane, you know, you look at the Chicago Cubs, and I know your ticket prices have been flat for two going on 3 years. But, you know, you do have one of the highest ticket prices in baseball, and how much time do you people spend in the front office talking about the fact that, okay, right now our product is certainly not worth what a lot of people are paying. The experience is still a great one, but how much juggling do you do when you know that you're in the midst of rebuilding to a certain extent and the ticket prices are still at the level of a championship caliber ask from the fan base?
Yeah, you know, it's the ticket pricing, as you point out, we haven't raised prices in several years. It's a really tough question because you're setting your prices at the end of the season. You have certain expectations as to what you'll do in the off season. You know, sometimes those deals come together and you spend the money, and sometimes they don't. You know, obviously, we spent a lot of money in the rotation, 60% of which has been hurt for most of the season. Our right fielder, our big acquisition, also has been banged up. Obviously, nothing that we could have foreseen. So, I mean, our expectation was this year would be a little bit better than what we're seeing. Not to use injuries as an excuse, but you know, it's been a tough run for us. And what we do with our ticket pricing is and I think I've used this answer a lot, and you're probably tired of hearing it, but we push all this information, like 5 million pieces of data, into a analytic process that tells us where our tickets trade on the secondary market, where they trade in the primary market. Every ticket, every seat, every game is different. So, you know, the upper deck's different than the lower part. The bleachers are different than the grandstand. An April game is different than a July game, and a Reds game is different than a Cardinals game. So all of that gets pushed into basically a black box that comes out with, these are the ticket prices based on market demand that we should expect next year. And we look at time of season, time of week, time of game, and all that stuff. And it comes out, it gives us a range. We've been kind of hanging toward the bottom end of the range, just waiting for signs of team performance to improve. And that's why we've kept them flat over the last two or three years. Hard to tell what we'll do this coming fall, but clearly the performance on the field this year will be an indicator as to what we do.
Joined by Crane Kenny for a few more moments here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Crane, I always think it's interesting to get your perspective on where things stand with the Marquee Sports Network. Certainly, a lot has changed in Major League Baseball. A lot has changed in the broadcast landscape since the Cubs, you know, went that direction and had your own network. How would you describe those changes and your ability to adapt? Because, and whether or not going to Marquee has how the expectations are now based on where they were when the network began.
Yeah, we're really excited about the performance of Marquee to date. You know, when our former network ended and the rights came back to us, both from WGN, ABC, and Comcast Sportsnet, you know, there was a question of what we do next. And you know, one of the things that we'd learned over the 20 years being a part of a four-team network was that we were limited in how much coverage we could give the team. You know, the pregame, the postgame would be curtailed. the ability to do the long-form documentaries, the ability to experiment with things, because it was a one-size-fits-all approach, which made sense. Obviously, all the teams feel strongly about the importance of their brands, and, you know, one team shouldn't have more airtime than the other. And, you know, so the goal of Marquee was to program it with more Cubs programming, and, you know, you've seen all that. I think the only RSN in the market to win multiple Emmys last year, so it's being recognized by the critics as being really successful on the programming side. And we're really proud of bringing Beth Mollins on, the first female to call a game for us. And anyway, lots of neat milestones. And I really think Mike and his team are doing a great job on the programming side. The business as a whole is changing just like it is for everyone. And as more and more people are turning to streaming services to get programming, I think you'll see, not just for us, but the entire league, and actually all of the leagues, start migrating toward streaming products. So ESPN now has ESPN Plus, and NBC has Peacock. And I think you'll see Marquee bring out a Marquee Plus product for those who've cut the cord, said, listen, I don't really want to have a cable service or a dish on my house. Going to get my programming through the internet. And I think next year you'll see Marquee launch a Marquee Plus product for those who have opted out of the cable ecosystem. So we'll migrate with it. I think there's also probably coming a scale play, maybe led by the league. You see Sinclair trying to do it. They're going to be launching in the next week or two, bringing all of their RSNs around the country together in one service. And I could see somewhere down the road MLB trying to bring all the RSNs together. We have a really interesting and kind of an aggravating blackout issue in parts of Iowa in particular, where the territory is technically inside the Cubs territory. So that means the MLB.com service, which is for outer market subscribers, is not available. But some of those cable systems don't carry the Cubs because they might be in a territory that's kind of shared between Milwaukee, the Brewers, the Twins, and the Cubs. And, you know, the cable system there said, we don't want to pick one over the other. We're not going to carry any of them. So those fans, those Cub fans, can't really watch our games except for on Fox and ESPN. So that national service would solve that blackout issue. So I think, David, it's always moving. I think you'll see a streaming service coming from Marquee and the others. In fact, the Red Sox launched their streaming service a couple weeks ago. And then I think you'll see the league or someone else, maybe it's NBC, maybe it's ESPN, try and bring all the RSNs together in a national play. So I think in the next 3-4 years, you'll see some more changing.
Crane, Gallagher Way has never looked better with the new statues in there. I imagine you get a lot of questions these days about, now that you have them in that area, how many more will be coming over the next few years, and who will be next? Is it Sandberg? Is it Charlie Grimm? Is it Frank Chance? Give our listeners a little hint of what the plan is for the future and adding statues in Gallagher Way.
Well, the Bruce Levine statue is a couple years from now, so we're going to have to hold on that one.
Most people will say that it's already a statue.
He's already a statue. No, yeah. No, I think it's you know, turned into the – and I'll be honest, I don't think we envisioned the – Gallagher Way would become what it is. I actually said this yesterday at the Bean signing ceremony. Like, I thought Gallagher Way would be a really neat, especially vibrant place on non-game days. And on game days, since it's ticketed, most fans would be inside the ballpark. And it's, you know, complete surprise to us that so many fans actually leave a seat that they paid for to come into Gallagher Way to watch the game on the Jumbotron there, in particular in April when the sun is, you know, setting in the west, and that part of the ballpark gets a little more warmth than we see inside Wrigley. So it's you know, we would say some of it was by design, some of it was by accident. It's become, you know, the most popular park on the north side. And we thought bringing the statues all in one place and creating more atmosphere, especially during the winter, you know, imagine now skating among the statues and all the other stuff that happens around the holidays, would be really, really neat. Clearly, we have two empty podiums, so there are going to be more statues. I don't want to hint at which one will be next, but it will be a player. It will not be a broadcaster. You'll just have to wait and see, but I think you probably have a pretty good idea where we're going.
Yeah, he might have a number 23 in his back at one time or another, but I'm just guessing, of course.
Yeah, we'll let that stay in the ether for now.
Crane, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and really enjoyed the visit.
All right. Thanks, David. See you, Bruce.
Crane Kenny, the Cubs president of business operations here on The Score. A lot to get to there, a lot to react to. When we come back, first, chin music here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
For some chin music.
Hey, Alan, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
Yeah, this week, it is a familiar guy who crowds the plate, and we come in high and tight with some chin music for Tony La Russa after he addressed his approach with players who might be ailing a little bit.
We always tell them, run to what your legs feel like. I mean, the most obvious thing is there's guys that can steal, and if their legs are barking, we just don't push it. But I can remember over the course of the years, you know, even like when I was here, Luzinski, we actually ran decent, and he had he was doing with a hamstring, so there was just still, look, you know, just run has to be, because that big bat in the middle of the lineup, and he started catching me for not running the ball out. We had to make it public, and he's being told at the risk of being fined. So it's just part of the game. It's an everyday game, and sometimes you got to be careful with your legs and your arm. I mean, maybe some throws you can't make.
All right, that was Tony La Russa. Bruce, I have plenty of thoughts about what that does to a baseball team when you tell them or you give them permission to not go full strength, not go 100%. But let's start with you. What was your reaction, and what is the context of those comments?
Well, the context is that you have guys that have had multiple injuries. You've had multiple leg injuries to Luis Robert and to Tim Anderson over the past 2 years, okay? They're your two best baseball athletes, as we pointed out earlier in the show, and Kendall Graveman agreed, two of the best baseball athletes in the game of baseball, who get by not only on great talent, but tremendous athleticism, which includes using their legs. For whatever reason, and whoever you want to blame, David, those legs have not held up over the last 2 years. And Robert is dealing with the same issue, although they wouldn't say it exactly, but the same issue that put him on the shelf for, what was it, a couple months last year when he had the groin strain issue that was almost detached. And with Robert, last year it was hamstring issues that put him on the shelf. Anderson on the DL twice last year with hamstring issues. Now it's a groin. So from all that perspective, if I'm running the team, it's not even Tony La Russa. It's Rick Hahn, it's Kenny Williams that are saying to Tony La Russa and to the players, hey, we need to play you, but you have to be smart about what you do when you're out there. You cannot go full force or else you're going to end up being lost for the season. I don't know, other than keeping them on the bench or on the IL, David, for a month, whether or not you can make the right call on a daily basis when it comes to that.
Okay, I want to be fair here, and I want to underscore what you said about this all starts with the fact the White Sox have a lot of guys who get injured a lot. And whether you don't call them injury prone, though, that'll alienate and get Rick Hahn, get his dander up. But the White Sox have a lot of guys who have problems with soft tissue injuries, correct?
No question.
So
no,
that's
question.
Where it no starts. Question. But I think that what's happened is, and maybe this is, you know, understandable, it bothers me. You go down the list of players, and we did this yesterday during transition with Lawrence and Dan on the Mullen Haas show, and Andrew Vaughn, Luis Robert, Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, Eloy Jimenez, Yasmani Grandal, Yoan Moncada, Adam Engel, all these players at one point in time have been told basically tap the brakes on the effort level. And I understand each one of those guys, you could point to an example of why that makes sense individually. What happens, though, Bruce, I would argue, is collectively lack of effort creates a lack of focus. And when you have one of the dumbest teams in baseball continuing to make base running mistakes, continuing to make defensive errors, and continuing to show lapses in focus, I don't have any doubt where it starts. You got guys whose effort is sort of like this whole casual approach to baseball is at the root of many of the Sox's problems. And I do think it starts when you have a manager who so consistently reminds people that not everybody is going 100%.
Well, I think his honesty really works against him. You know,
probably
if he tells you that, you know, I'm not saying you're wrong to say that, but from the perspective of a player internalizing what that means, David, I think that's the difficult part because each player might take it differently. If he's out there and he knows he's only going to run 70% to first base, every fan in the stand, you know, you don't have to be a guy that's been in the game for 50 years like Steve Stone or Tony La Russa to know whether a guy's running full out to first base or not. You have to be paying attention to understand why. But at the same time, when Robert and Anderson don't run full to first base, it's a bad look. It's a bad look all around, okay?
Bad look.
So my answer to that is, you know what? If you're not 100% and you have a chance of hurting yourself again while you're out there, do not be in the game, okay? Do not play them. Do not put them in the game because it's not fair to the player. It's not fair to the paying customer, and it's not fair to the manager to put those guys in that position. I believe that when the medical staff says, yeah, he can play, but, you know, you got to tell him to be careful out there. To me, that's telling me, and again, I don't have any skin in the game, so it's easy for me to say, that's telling me running the team that I can't put the guy in the game. If he's that risky to have another injury out there and he's so important to my team, I can't have him playing that day.
Well, I think that's an interesting conclusion to reach because I don't know that you're that far away from having to do that, Bruce, because what you have – when you – Steve Stone, we're blessed. It's a privilege to have him on the score as often as we have him on the score. White Sox fans are treated to him in the booth every single game. When he goes out of his way to call out Luis Robert and then he goes out of his way to dust off a Bobby Cox story about when he pulled Andrew Jones – I don't think that he's exaggerating, and I don't think it's accidental. I think he is doing that to point out the fact that this is part of a bigger problem, and how you provide a solution, I think, is one of these things you have to study again in the off season. But I don't know. I don't know how you address it in terms of, okay, then you say nobody who's injured, nobody's 100%. Can play or is eligible to play or you can't do that.
I'm pinpointing two guys, and I'm pinpointing two guys that depend on their athleticism more than most, okay, to get the job done. And clearly, over the last couple of days, you have seen them not be able to get the job done. And these are wonderful players, two of the best players in the game. But they are clearly having a hard time adjusting to going out there not being 100% and reining in their ability. I'm not saying it's their fault. I'm saying that if they don't know how to do that, put them on the bench, put someone else in there because it's not fair to them. It's not fair to the paying customer. It's not fair to the manager.
Well, it only takes one guy who is lollygagging or not hustling. It only takes one example to make a point. And I think that, you know, in the case when Stoney told the story about Bobby Cox and Andrew Jones, that made an impression on Andrew Jones, the player, individually, but I think collectively on the entire team. And I just think that this culture of casual is what has permeated the White Sox clubhouse. I kidded yesterday. The slogan for 1983 was winning ugly. The slogan for 2022 is trying barely. This is a team that is not going to overexert itself.
I don't think that's fair because of all the injuries. You're talking about two different things, David. You're talking about injured players out there, and you're talking about whether they're giving 100% or not. And I don't think they can or want to give 100% at this point because of being told to be cautious. And look, when you played sports, no matter what level, if you were a little bit injured, you knew you weren't going to go 100% and try and blow out whatever it was hurting you. You don't need to be told that. But in this case, you know, you have guys that are at the highest level of sport, and they need a little guidance because has Tim Anderson never not hustled before? Has Luis Robert never not hustled before in their careers?
See, I'll stop you there, Bruce. Yes, Tim Anderson, he hustles. I have no problem with T.A. He's changing the game. He's tried and true. I think he's a proven guy. Luis Robert, I think, does have he has shown moments where I would make an example and I would prove a point to Luis Robert just so it makes him a better player, and he remembers that he can't take that casual approach.
When did you see it? Because I can't pinpoint it. All I know is this is a guy that blew out his groin, you know, an element of his groin that was not attached to the leg at some point, missed a whole lot of time. Do you think that you can determine in between where that was, where you saw him not hustle?
Well, okay, am I going to – the other night – I mean, the other night was one. Okay, he's injured.
Yeah, but he's an injured player now.
Okay,
he's injured. Right?
I'm not gonna accept. Okay, fine. I'm not gonna be able to cite chapter and verse and specific and have a footnote here. But I don't think it's going over. I'm over my skis by saying the White Sox have a hustle issue. They have a lot of guys that don't take a. They're not as intense as you want them to be. They don't have a lot of Dandy Mendix, extra grindy guys, and that's that approach. Needs some work. I think they definitely can improve on their approach.
I don't know the players you're talking about, but I will tell you that injured players like Robert and like Anderson should not be out there because they can't play at the highest level that they play at. Now, it's easy for me to say because I know the next man up isn't really there, and you are getting your wish today. Sosa is leading off in the Chicago White Sox order and playing second base.
Good.
So
All right.
I got a text from Tony and said, please tell David Haw, I listened to what he – here, I'm reading it right now.
Yeah,
tell
sure
David
Haw,
I listened to what
sure
he said, and
mock
Sosa
me
is leading off.
Mock me if you want, off. Bruce. Mock me if you want. Okay, I'll be the meatball White Sox fan who says that team doesn't play hard enough, and there's a connection between effort and intensity and focus and why they kick the ball around and get thrown out at home plate and can't run the bases. And picked off
I think
first,
there's a
the
different
way.
Look, I appreciate and respect
picked
your
off,
opinion.
Ticked off.
I think there's a difference between hustle and baseball IQ.
Okay.
And I believe that the baseball IQ there in some cases is lacking.
And I think the hustle is lacking. They're deficient in both areas. But Bruce, quickly, Lenin Sosa is leading off, playing second. Andrew Vaughn, the DH, batting second. I'm sorry, he's batting second. Luis Robert is back in the lineup, center field, batting third. Abreu, Pollock, Sheets, Berger, Lurie Garcia playing short, giving Tim Anderson a day off, and Reese McGuire behind the plate. That is your White Sox lineup for the Orioles. Lance Lynn on the mound. Hopefully he can get back on track and be the pitcher he was the last time out. That will be a good afternoon at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Absolutely.
All right. Take a deep breath. That was fun, Bruce. A little chin music for Tony. And you threw me a little bit of a heater as well.
Yeah, I had to block a couple of haymakers from you as well.
A couple things we want to react to with from the Crane Kenny interview. We will do that when we come back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Thanks for listening this morning. After us, Steve Rosenblum is solo until Cubs pregame at 12:45. Zach Zabin at that point. Cubs Cardinals down in St. Louis. Miles Michaelis and Adrian Sampson, Bruce, on the mound for the Cubs. White Sox today. Lance Lynn against Spencer Watkins of the Orioles. White Sox and Orioles both have 33 victories. The White Sox have 36 losses, the Orioles 39. So let's go back. We have done a lot this show. It's been a lot of fun. Crane Kenny, what was your biggest takeaway, Bruce, in terms of when he was asked about spending, as he typically is, and just his overall message, if he had one to send? What did you take away from his time here?
Well, I really, you know, not disagreeing that there was money there that was left on the table from the offseason, and that it's up to Jed to, take that next year and roll it over and spend it the way that he feels right. So from what I got out of that is that Jed Hoyer and the baseball department didn't feel like, with what they had at this point with the team, it was prudent to spend money on Correa or make the Hosmer trade because they were further away from competing than a lot of people thought, and that they thought it was more prudent to save that money for a time where they're closer to compete, which might be in 2023, 24, and 25. So from that, that's what I glommed off of that the money is there, but that the baseball department didn't feel there were worthy candidates that would make this team a contender right now.
I did not hear anything, correct me if I'm wrong, I did not hear anything that would dissuade me from encouraging the Cubs to look at this next offseason as one where they could aggressively spend their way back into respectability, however far they drop, or playoff contention if they have the right approach. I don't want to disqualify that here on June 25th and write off 2023, because I did hear Crane Kenny say if the opportunity presents itself, the Cubs would have the resources and the willingness to go spend to get the right players at the right time, and if that's next offseason, so be it.
Well, I think, yeah, that's what I just said. I said that the money was there this year, though.
Yep.
So if they wanted, I mean, look, next year, if these prospects in the minor league, let's give a proper scenario. If the prospects in the minor leagues are closer to the big league level for the Cubs, and they feel that some of the guys like Steele and some of the guys like Thompson, some of the people like Amaya, who will be coming back as a catcher, if some of these people are closer to the big leagues and are more competitive, I think at that point what he was saying is when Hoyer wants to spend that money is there to the tune of $30, $40, $50 million more in the coffers, I believe, will be there for him to plug in when that scenario is correct. Now, also, will the Cubs be a lot closer to contending when they make their next group of trades? And that could be as within the next month. In other words, when Contreras is traded, if and when Hendricks is traded, okay, if and when Stroman is traded, will that bring them just young players or players that are close to the big league caliber of players that you want for the future? So I think when you look at the Cubs, you're going to have to analyze them after the trading deadline, after the minor league season, and then look at them and say, is this team ready to put $30 million a year in Carlos Correa? Okay. Is this team ready to get one of the top pitchers in the free agent draft? Are we close to it? Is 23 the year, or is it 24 and beyond?
Bruce, speaking of prospects, the White Sox, as we pointed out earlier, are starting and leading off. Lenin Sosa, he's playing second base. He's leading off today. He's wearing number 50. Bruce, I don't know if I've been as excited about a White Sox game in a long time as I am for today's. I'm more excited about this White Sox game than I am about the Kenny Chesney concert tonight. And you know how much I love Kenny Chesney. So this is an opportunity for the Sox maybe to get a little bit of a spark. You think? No?
Well, yes. He's a talented young guy. Is he ready to play in the big leagues? We'll find out. You won't find out in one game. You won't find out in one game, David.
Well, tell Tony that. If you're saying he may only get one game to start this weekend.
If you're telling me that he's in the lineup and he's played 2 weeks and 3 weeks, I mean, can you tell? Look, Can you tell me what morale is going to be? Is he going to be the 330, 350 hitter that he was the first 3 weeks, or is he going to be the 200 hitter that he's been since that time? I mean, are you going to be able to tell me what type of player Morel is yet?
No. Different scenario. He's going to get his chance over time to succeed, fail, and to ride that course, because the Cubs aren't playing for anything except for the future. The White Sox are in a more immediately win-now mode, and Lenin Sosa can give a team that has managed one run in their past two games potentially a spark at the top. And if he's not ready for this opportunity, he shouldn't be here. He should not have skipped a step. But he is. So let's see what the kid has for a little while, because they don't have another solution that makes any more sense at second base. And please don't tell me Lourdes Garcia, because that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I'm with you. But if he's a big league caliber player and he plays up to that level, keep him in there. That's fine. I don't think they're playing him just to appease you today, David. I mean, you might think so, but
I don't think that. Yeah. Where'd you get that from?
Well, I mean, the whole show has been, Sosa, the savior of the White Sox. So
Chicago welcomes Sosa. See, that's the headline.
My take is, I hope the kid does well. I hope he stays in there. But if that's your solution to the White Sox problem, it's not gonna equate a world championship level ending for the team in 2022.
Bruce, you are both overstating the significance and impact of my words and my my desire to see Lenin Sosa.
And
in
we're
the
in the entertainment business, David. I mean,
I hear you. I think today is an opportunity. I'm looking forward to it, and let's hope the White Sox. Look at this kid and give him a chance, more than just one game, because I heard from a manager not willing to play a guy. He said, well, if he has success, it sounds like he's going to be temporary. Let's hope that he does something that makes that a little more permanent and stick around.
I've been waiting for Sosa to have an impact with the White Sox for over 30 years now.
Let's hope that the White Sox don't trade Sosa again. Down that road.
David, right, we have people to thank.
We do.
Including Kendall Graveman of the Chicago White Sox, Crane Kenny, the president of baseball business office for the Cubs. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Our website, I write Cubs and Sox, 670thescore.com. Had a great time, David. Thanks.
Thanks, Bruce. Steve Rosenblum is next. Cub pregame, 12:45 with Zach Zaidman. And appreciate you listening here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus. With customizable tools and charts you can access across all your devices. Try our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/trader plus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.